Okay, welcome to class, everybody. Very good to have everyone here. By way of introductions, I am Joe Beiler from Fairland, Oklahoma. I'm very privileged to be at this institute again. Really looking forward to it. Our third year here, and I've been very blessed each year I'm here, so hopefully all of you will enjoy it as well. So before you came in, for those of you who just came, and it's not a big deal that you missed it, but before you came in, we did a little survey to see, first of all, who actually knew what the title of this workshop was, and very few did, or were too shy to raise their hands. And then, secondly, we talked about how important it is to capture a student's attention. And we wanted to see how many people thought, on a scale from 1 to 10, whether it rated about a 5 or a 6 or a 7. And we got a lot of 7s and a lot of some 9s and a lot of 10s. So the survey would show that we think capturing their attention is a pretty big deal. So we'll see about that, and we'll talk about that as we go into the workshop. I'd like for you to imagine a scenario with me, please. Suppose you were tasked with the responsibility, and this is a hypothetical now, so just imagine with me for a minute that you were tasked with the responsibility of teaching a group of young people about survival on some remote island that they were destined to live on for the rest of their lives through no choice of their own. It's just the way fate would have it. Suppose further that this island was populated with smart but potentially savage people, people who would happily take advantage of less educated individuals. And finally, these potentially mean people spoke a language that included many words that were not familiar to the students or to the group of children that you're talking to. They actually don't have the fuzziest idea about them. In short, the survival of these children could very well lay in your hands as their instructor. Now, suppose that were your job. How important would it be to be able to keep their attention when trying to teach them and prepare them for island life? Quite important, right? Are we 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere up there? We think it'd be quite important for them to listen to you as their instructor, all right? We'd be wasting everybody's time if they did not, both yours and theirs. Now, let's recap that just a little bit, and I'm sure you know where this is going, but our students are actually destined to live right here on planet Earth through no choice of their own, right?
Excuse me, if you don't have a handout, raise your hand. Just keep talking.
This land is actually populated with smart and sometimes savage people, unfortunately. And it's populated with people who would gladly take advantage of less educated people, of less informed people. Also on this planet, people actually speak a language that the students, and I'm talking lower grade levels now, that the students, when they come through the doors, they have a very, very, very small grasp of the language and the words that are going to be used throughout life going forward. Finally, perhaps not the survival of these students, but the thrival, if I may make a word up. Your students aren't going to thrive in this land, on this planet we call Earth, unless they get some help. And that's at least partly dependent upon you, upon me as their instructors. We are the instructors, and we cannot afford to lose their attention. Wouldn't that seem like a waste of everybody's time? All right, now, we're going to go back to the survey we did at the beginning, and I'd like to ask you again, how important do you think it is, or have you changed your vote at all? So for those of you who voted 10, thank you. For those of you who voted 10, would you move it down from 10? Are you down to about a 6 or a 5 or something? For those of you who voted 7, would you move it up? How important is it to capture their attention? I think we could make a pretty good case for it being a good solid 9, right? Perhaps 10. Because if we lose their attention, we've wasted our time and we've wasted their time and nobody's to gain. All right, an important disclaimer here. And Mervin covered this actually quite well. I was sitting up here finishing a few thoughts up, and he was just kind of going down the list and ticking some things off that I wanted to talk about. But capturing their attention is only a noble goal if the attention grab is not about you as their instructor. This is not about you capturing their attention and getting them to, you know, just look at you and become like you. It's about our students becoming excited about living a useful and purpose-filled life on planet Earth, right? It's about them, it's about us helping them to buck the winds of entitlement and getting much for little input. And it's about them actually wanting to become useful individuals in this society. In short, we like to capture their attention long enough in school that even before we've moved off the scene, they've shifted their attention from us to our vision. And again, not our vision, but the vision of becoming useful Christians in the world we live in. And you see, if we have done that, then it's not about us anymore. And they're going to actually be useful people going forward and long after we passed off the scene. We will have done them and the world a favor. We will have shown them how important it is to live a good life. So it's important that we catch their attention so they catch our vision. Again, they might go home, and you know how this works. They might go home evenings and talk about you as a teacher around the supper table. In fact, they're probably going to do that. They'll say stories about what happened at school, and the teacher is kind of in the middle of it by default. And that's not all wrong. It's not all bad. You just have to deal with that as a teacher. But at the end of the day, I would hope that what they get excited about talking about at home around the supper table is not the teacher. It's what they learned about. And, of course, everything that goes with it. Sadly, most children never realize that the devil plays the long game. You know, somebody has said the devil can even quote scripture when it's for his cause, if he can twist it to his cause. He plays the long game, and he tries to get their attention and keep their attention and doesn't want them to realize that he is playing for keeps. All right? Conversely, that's actually exactly what we're intending to do as teachers. We're intending to get their attention and keep their attention and not let it get away from us. We are not playing, but working in this case for keeps. Don't ever lose that vision, all right? It's not just the first day. It's not just the first week. It's not just the first month. You want their attention for keeps. And again, not on you primarily, but we're passing it on to the one that we serve. Play the long game with them. All right, so I think we have the necessity of the cause clearly established. We know that we need to keep their attention or we have wasted our time. Now, let's talk about the challenges. I'm going to open it up here. What's the biggest challenge? What is a large challenge for you in your classroom? What are you combating? What do you have to fight against to get and keep attention? Any input here? What's happening in their inner world? Very good. So we don't know what's going on at home for them. We don't know what's going on in their minds. We have students at all different levels of maturity and growing up, and they have a lot to deal with. All right, what else? What else do we face that we have to be very careful with? Excuse me. Losing the attention of the fast ones while teaching the slow ones. You know, if you'd like to, you can save some of these for questions, and we'll try to give a little time for those at the end, and maybe somebody would have some input on that, because that's a really, really tough one. How do you keep one student's attention when the other student is taking so much time, and he is just bored out of his mind, to quote one of my students? Oh, I was going to tell you that to start with. So I remember one time I had this really fast student who did not like to work. He was a fast student, but he didn't like to work. He just, get it done, move through it. And I remember almost tiptoeing around this student. It was bad, but I almost tiptoeed around because I didn't want to give him too much work because I knew it would upset him because he didn't like to work, but he was brilliant. And I remember one day at the end of a period, he had been sitting there before we dismissed, and I wasn't sure exactly what he was doing, but I saw he was doodling. And so when I had a chance to walk by his desk, I just looked over his shoulder, and here he had written in some really kind of neat doodle. He had written, "Bored out of my mind." That's what he wrote. And then he wrote, you know, had little curly Q's all around it. And I was like, are you kidding me? Here is a student that has so much potential. And I was tiptoeing around. And anyway, I'll tell you more about that student after a bit. But those things happen. He was a smart student, bored out of his mind. All right. Another thing that we have to combat.
Competing with peer pressure.
Peer pressure. Very good. Competing with peer pressure. And again, that almost goes back to that inner thing. There's so many things going on inside. How about the living, breathing world around us? Do your students ever say, oh, I just wish we could do school outside, or I just wish I wouldn't be confined to this classroom? So we have newborn calves and baby kittens and big bucks, right? They're all competing for the students' attention. We have alfalfa to mow and corn to chop and beans to combine, and the boys just love doing that. They think it'd be so nice to be out harvesting crops instead of sitting in this stupid classroom. We have waterfalls and hiking trails and swimming holes and biking, and there's so many active sports that are just becoming a craze anymore, and the students love them, and I'm not faulting them at all. And then finally, bass and crappie and catfish, and they want to be out fishing. Why would you be learning? Why would you be studying if you could do all this? And I haven't even mentioned, you know where I'm going, right? Devices and screens and entertainment platforms. And they're things just 24/7 hovering over our children, just screaming for their attention. And we're supposed to keep their attention in a little 12 by 22 or excuse me, whatever size classroom there is. And I think that in the battle of trying to keep their attention, thank you, we get so sidetracked. And we try to keep their attention in ways that we actually lose their attention. We become a distraction instead of keeping their attention. Anything else that you have that's an attention grabber or attention, yeah, that's kind of a drain in your classroom? Okay, if not, I would like to tell you how the naysayers talk. This is how the naysayers talk. They say, good luck with that, or I wouldn't waste my time, or I don't envy you. How can you ever keep their attention? All they see is that 12 by 22 confinement center that you keep your children in for 6 hours, and you're expected to keep their attention. And what you see when you walk through the doors of your classroom is a research base or a data center, a communication hub, a relationship exchange platform, a place alive with a million or so neural, emotional, mental, and physical exchanges, a place alive with activity and happiness. You know, the world is alive and breathing around us, and that's where our students want to go. Let's just make our rooms, let's make our classrooms alive, and let's make them breathe. And let's make the students want to be there because that's where the life is. And it is possible. And you say, where's a room like that? I say, let's make a room like that. We could all make a room like that. I remember Jeff Jarman making this really, really nice, telling this really nice story years ago about a man who was just this most dedicated, sharing individual and how their family, and he just glowing terms about this family. And he said, and now I know what the question is going to be. You're going to say, where is this man? I want to go see this man. And he said, I'm not going to tell you who it is. He said, just go be the man. And I think that is our challenge as teachers. Let's go make the classroom, make it vibrant. I am actually going to use this, and I put this up here for your benefit if you would like to either take a picture of it or write it down. Not original with me at all, but I plan to use it this year, and I'm going to read it to you. On our classroom door, I would like to use this poster. It says, when you enter this classroom, you are scientists, you are explorers, you are important, you are loved, you are respected, you are a friend, you are the reason I am here, and then the teacher's name at the bottom. Do you see how that speaks to so many of the things that have already come up? You are a scientist, you are explorers, talking about living and breathing and curiosity. The important part, loved, respected, and friend. Do you see how that speaks to their inner needs, the peer pressure? They understand that you have actually spent your whole, seems like your whole life, right? Your whole school term up to this point because of them. They are the reason you are here. So let's make our classrooms a place like that. Now, you're saying, well, we've had nothing practical. Well, that's kind of true. So if you'll bear with me just a little bit more, I would like to tell you about point number one. Point number one is going to be sell the sizzle, not the steak. Again, not original with me, but sell the sizzle, not the steak. So if you have your little handouts with you, I left them really blank on purpose and really plain looking on purpose, because we're not trying to compete with the digital media in the classroom, okay? We can try, but there's so much flashy stuff out there. You're probably not going to, if you're like me, you'll fall flat trying to use that stuff. So really plain handout, sell the sizzle. And I left not the steak off there just to try to keep it concise. All right, too often we try to feed our students steak without giving them any reason for anticipation. Let's sell the sizzle instead. And if you'll bear with me, I'm going to tell you a short story. So I used to work at a boys' ranch. I worked there for between 4 and 5 years. And it was a place where troubled boys congregated. Now, I say this completely respectfully, but it was like a bad classroom on steroids. That's what it was like. Okay, so there were just a lot of bad things came to the ranch. And that does not mean those were bad boys. You understand? It just means they have made bad choices. They were good boys. All people are created in the image of God. They were good boys, but they have made bad choices. And it doesn't mean their homes were bad. I want to be very respectful here. There were definitely boys who came from needy homes, because we all have needy homes. But what I'm saying is a lot of nasty things came together at the ranch. And I remember one boy in particular coming. And he came to the ranch, and this little blonde-haired, shorter guy, lots of freckles, and he came to the ranch. And he was angry. He was just angry at the world. He just angry. he was defensive. His defenses were a mile higher, maybe seven. Anytime you would try to tell him something, he flared up, and he just hated everything about authority. He hated everything about the ranch. He wanted nothing to do with me. He didn't want to be there, in short, all right? And he was, at first glance, a difficult boy to work with. He had a loud mouth and a big ego, and he had driven his parents to their knees in tears many times because of the choices he had made. I remember his dad making comments to me about things that happened at home and how difficult life was. And here comes this boy into my life. And I couldn't wait for him to come. I remember being so eager for him to come. I remember I just couldn't wait until he came through the door and we got to be friends and we got to know each other and we could give him another chance. He settled into the ranch routine and very quickly discovered that routine was something he had pushed out of his life for way too long. And it was very difficult for him to get back into routine again. Life was hard for him. His loud mouth and his big ego got him into lots of trouble. You know how it is when you get children together, and for sure boys together. We all have big egos, unfortunately, to deal with, especially before becoming Christians. And, well, this boy was no exception. One afternoon, I was in the office, and my phone dings, and a text message comes through. I looked at it. Here's this boy's mentor, and he said, "Can you come out to the furniture shop?" Sure, I can come out to the furniture shop. He said, "I need help." So I got out to the furniture shop, and right in the middle of the furniture shop, there were no other boys around at the time, no mentors except for these two, just this boy and the mentor. Right in the middle of the furniture shop, this boy was crying, and he was frustrated, and the freckles on his face were standing out. And he said, "He's just tired of it." He said, "It's not fair." He said, "Everybody else can be happy except me." I looked at him. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's just not fair. Everybody else is happy, and I... And he got all worked up and all upset. And I said, "Well, listen, all you have to do is give your heart to the Lord." I said, "You can actually have what everybody else has." And he said, "Oh, I'm just ready." He said, I just want to make my stuff right." And he was crying. And I said, "No," I said, "I don't think you're ready." And that might surprise you a little bit, but I've discovered that with these boys, they want to just act like they want to be Christians because they want all the perks, right? So you kind of have to push them off a little bit. And he looked at me and he said, "I'm ready." He said, "I declare I'm ready." He said, just help me. And I said, "Okay, yeah, you're ready." He said, And we got on our knees. And that concrete in the furniture shop became hallowed ground that day. And that boy gave his heart to the Lord. And he got up and his face was just shining. And a whole new day had started for him. And every bit of passion that he had put into being an ornery, rebellious child just got reinvested into a life of righteousness. And it was a beautiful story of redemption. And you're saying, "What does that have to do with keeping their attention?" I have a question for you. How many of you would like to go work at that ranch right now? There are so many boys that need help, right? Come on, let's go. Thank you. There's so many boys who need help. There's so little time. There are many, many, many of them out there. Wouldn't you love to go? But hang on a second. You don't even know where this ranch is. Most of you don't, right? You don't know anybody there. Why would you get invested? You see, the point is this. I just sold you the sizzle, or I attempted to, right? That was the sizzle. That was not the steak. And I could spend a lot more time telling you about all the times that I was the one in tears, not the boys. I was the one in tears because I made bad calls and because I made bad decisions there. Because the difficulties were just too big for us as humans to handle for too long, all right? And all we have to do is sell our students the sizzle. You see, and here's the other thing. I thought about using school for this because I'm just as passionate about teaching. I love to teach. However, I was afraid you all wanted to teach already. You don't really want to go to a boys' ranch, right? Your students don't really want to be in school half the time, and they don't think it pertains to anything. Well, the boys' ranch doesn't pertain to any of you either here, for the most part. However, it's just a thrilling place to work, and I would love to take you there. Well, school can be that way for your students. They come in the door, and I'm thinking particularly of a student I once had now. He would come in the door, and he was just lethargic. He was lazy. And I had so much fun getting him excited about school. And you could see him doing it against his will. Like he didn't want to act. But then he'd come. And the first thing I knew, he was so engaged he couldn't help himself. And I'd see him go out the door with a bounce, and next morning, come back and just come. And so we worked for about 45 minutes, and eventually he'd go out the door, and the next day we did it all over again. Anyhow, so sell the sizzle, not the steak. You will get through with the sizzle. All right, we need to move on to point number two. Somebody want to guess? What? Oh, no, I just have in the on there, don't I? So this one is believe. Believe in the steak. Believe in the steak. And I don't know if you are convinced by now that I'm convinced about a few things in life. But anyway, believe in the steak. I remember one, and again, Boys Ranch story, sorry. But I remember one couple coming to the ranch, and I was being a huge promoter of this certain program that my wife and I were really interested in and had, the man had come to our church and given us a session, a bunch of sessions, all the married couples in church, on family life and how to do family. And it was just great. So every time thereafter, whenever we had a boy come to the ranch, his parents would come visit, and we'd say, hey, you need to go here, you need to do this. And I particularly remember this one couple. I was just promoting this guy's program, and I said, you just need to go there. This will just change your life. And my wife and I did it with our church. And anyway, and finally I got done. I said, are we anywhere close to convincing you? And he goes, well, he said, I'll just say this. I'm convinced that you're convinced. He said, I'll give you that. But I couldn't convince him. Never did convince him. He wasn't interested at all. So you need to believe in the stake. You need to be passionate about what you teach. Let's apply this directly to math class. So make it a big deal, and yeah, both sides of the room, make it a big deal that your students understand that you actually care whether they make it or not in life financially. That's not all consequential, but it's a pretty big deal. You want them to be able to do good math and to manage their money well and to not be in debt the rest of their life on the first vehicle they bought. They need to realize that it's actually important to you that they understand the history of this country. And maybe, especially in today's day, that it's equally important, I think, equally important that they understand why we don't get involved in the politics of today and that we are from a different citizenship. They need to understand that you care about literature stories and that the lessons they teach really seriously matter to you. I just love reading stories to my school students, and I think, well, we'll get into that a little bit later, but do you remember the story of Cornelius Woodbridge, the Hezekiah Woodbridge test? Do you remember that story in one of the readers? I don't remember which one it is, one of Christian Light's readers. And they have the president of the railroad company tells his son that he needs to send his boys out on the Hezekiah Woodbridge test for the day. I read that story to my students usually first or second day of every school term. And I get so frustrated because at the end I need to cry. It just makes me cry to see how that man, the boy, just passed the test. And And it's okay to cry. It's okay to tear up just a little bit because your students know that you care about the lesson you're teaching by reading them the story. And then they care. And by extension, it becomes a part of them. So, be convinced and let them know you're convinced about the steak whose sizzle you're selling. Number three, nudge them toward the what? Fill that in for me. It's not a right or wrong answer. I'm just really curious where your mind goes.
Steak.
What was that?
Steak.
Nudge them toward the steak. Thank you. Good answer. What else? Nudge them toward the steak. Anybody else? Feel free here. All right. I have impossible. Nudge them toward the impossible. So this is going to be a little lesson out of the Countess and the Impossible. Do you remember that story? But anyhow, we'll get to that in a minute. Nudging your students might sound like, that might sound lethargic. Here I was just talking about being passionate and exhilarating, and then you just nudge them? And it's like, okay, so what's wrong? I'm not backpedaling. I'm not saying we shouldn't be passionate. What I'm saying is that if we are passionate, do you know what it's going to translate to in a student? A nudge. Just a nudge. Seriously. So we can sit here and get all excited about this, right? But you know as well as I do, when you walk through your classroom doors, so there are times and there are students who are exceptional. And you can just see the spark in their eyes and they just get on board right away and it's amazing what happens. But your passion is probably going to just translate as a nudge. So nudge them toward the impossible. What's the impossible? I remember last year in physical general science, I believe it was, we were talking about evolution, and the man dedicates, Nathan, he dedicates a whole chapter to disproving evolution, or to citing the evidence that disproves evolution, anyway, and it's a pretty stakey type of chapter, right? You get into the module and they're reading it and they don't like the big words and they don't like to learn about the fossil. Well, the fossil caves aren't too bad, but there's so many things in there they don't like to learn about. So we started making sketches on the board. And we started having interesting conversations about how these things might have happened. And we started seeing the evidence against evolution that has just been proven over and over again that it's just being blatantly disregarded by scientists. And my students started getting emotional about it. They were like, they just, why would anybody believe this stuff? It's just, and it wasn't a naive emotional response. It wasn't an uninformed response. You know how we can be sometimes. We say, oh, that's stupid. I would never believe evolution. And we don't really know why. That's not the type of response it was. It was from being informed. And we had some really, really enjoyable conversations, really, really animated discussions about it. And you won't believe what happened. We had a persuasive argument assignment coming up in the not-too-distant future. And I had two students, or maybe three, I forget which, voluntarily choose, guess what? How science disproves evolution for their topic, for their subject matter. Now, to be fair, I did suggest it. But I didn't ask for it at all. And there were plenty of other easy things. Oh, and they just jumped on that thing and tremendous essays. And I'm bragging just a little bit. They did great, okay? I mean, it wasn't me, it was them. They did a wonderful job. And I remember after bringing the essays in, I wished Mr. Darwin would still be around and send the essays to him and see what he has to say about them. I guess I could have tried Ken Ham. But anyway, at any rate, they enjoyed the sizzle. They enjoyed the sizzle so much that they tasted the steak. And then they enjoyed the steak, and I put those one or two of those articles in the annual. And then they were a little, kind of like, really? Because they had tackled something meaty, and tackling meaty stuff isn't that popular. It was just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful feeling, wonderful outcome from that. All right, how about the bored boy at the beginning? Remember the bored boy I told you? He said, bored out of my mind. And he had all kinds of time to doodle. Well, in that boy's home, he did not have them. They're in their home, they did not require their children to go to 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, whatever. And so he was talking about stopping at 8. Well, he changed his mind. And you know what he told me? He told me personally, he said, the reason I want to go to 9th grade is because I want to do Algebra 1 to prove that I can do it. Okay, maybe a bit self-centered, but on the other hand, that's not all bad. Really? So a little sizzle somewhere. And he's tasting some steak because, I mean, the way he had been going into 7th grade, he's, anything but Algebra 1, he was going to avoid it. But by the time he got, anyway. So you see how Little Sizzle sold it. Now, the Countess and the Impossible, I'm going to just recount the story really briefly. And how much time do we have? Recount the story really briefly. Do you remember the story about the Countess who the boy came to the Countess's doorstep? Or did she see him out? I should have read the story again. Sorry. I read it to my students every year, but I forget the detail. I think she saw him outside and corralled him and said, I need my lawn. I need somebody to mow my lawn. And he came and mowed the lawn for her. And when he got done mowing the lawn, she paid him. And, oh, by the way, she was outside nudging him along. She said, do this, do that. And then she said, show up at my doorstep when you're done and I'll pay you. So he did. And he came up to the doorstep. And she said, so how much do I owe you? And the boy's like, really? You're asking me? She said, yeah, how much do I owe you? So he named an amount, and I forget, was it 50 cents or a dollar? And she said, okay, she said, here's the dollar that you asked for. And she said, here's another dollar. And this is for what I pushed you to do. So she had pushed him beyond what he was going to do. And she said, here's what I earned for you, but it's worth the $2. And then she said, how much do you think this lawn could be worth? Or maybe he asked her, I forget how the interchange went. But they said, they've talked about how much it's worth. And at the end of the conversation, she said, she just thinks a $5, she said, $3, $4, 3 is good, 4 is excellent, $5, nah. She said, that's impossible. She said, you'll never be able to mow a $5 lawn. It's just out there. You know what happened, right? So nudge them toward the impossible. And you probably remember how the story ended. Again, a tough one for me to read and not get a little emotional about. But at the end of the story, that boy did his $5 lawn. He went into her, and he had taken, I forget, I think a level, a straight edge, all sorts of stuff to get everything just right, working all the mole holes out of the yard. And when he got done, he went into her, and she asked how much. And this had been, he had been doing this for a long time. And he looks up at her, and he says, $5. And she looked at him, and her eyes just, and she said, no, that's not possible. He said, well, come on out. And she went out and inspected the entire lawn with him. She said, "You're right." She said, "You did the impossible. You mowed a $5 lawn." So let's nudge them toward that impossible and remember that if they have done it on their own, we have just handed them a tool that they can use the rest of their life. A student who chose a little steak for themselves because of the sizzle you sold will have much more appreciation for the steak than the one who knows all the facts because you merely required them to memorize them. All right? So sell them the sizzle and they'll taste the steak. Number four, safeguard. Safeguard the... mystery. Seriously, mystery. All right, safeguard the mystery. Do you remember how your mom told you when you were reading, you just started school, or you just started reading, and your mom told you, don't turn to the back of the book. Don't cheat. Don't look at the back and see what happened. Just start from the beginning and read all the way through. Well, it turns out mom was exactly right. Her advice was timeless, as always. Don't uncover the mystery for them. Keep it as mysterious as possible when you're teaching your students. A couple of things that you, and okay, for lower grade teachers in particular, this is not that difficult because there's still a lot of things that are mysterious. Students actually haven't even lost their sense of wonder, not so much anyhow, not in first and second and third grade. But you get to fourth and fifth and on up, just, there's nothing awesome about life anymore, especially not in the day of being able to Google anything. They're like, oh yeah, I saw last night, I checked that out. And they've lost the wonder by the time they're that age. Most of the time they have been. But let's try to keep a little mystery in things. I have 2 points for this. They're not on your handout. If you care to write them down, feel free. But first thing is, know the content of your textbook and keep tossing out enticing little spoilers. Know the content of your textbook and keep tossing out enticing little spoilers. Like, oh, I wish, so we're going to study this today, and I wish we would have time to take you to, it's just such a neat trick. But sorry, we don't have time. That's in 2 weeks. And they're like, oh, yeah, please. You're like, no, there's no time today. And guess what? In 2 weeks, you're like, hey, do you remember? Yeah, that's today. Oh, and we get all excited about the little spoiler that you gave them. But remember, don't actually spoil it. Just keep the mystery kind of shrouded, just so. Letter B, know as much more about the subject as you can allot time to study for. All right, so that sounds a little disjointed, sorry. But know your subject beyond the textbook, as much as you have time to study for. And I had a fun one last year. With this one, we were studying electricity and magnetism. And I became so fascinated about it myself that I wish I would have time to draw an illustration on the board, but I did some study, a lot of study online actually. And there was this fellow who put a, so he had, I might just quickly do it, is that okay? So he had, I totally forget the footage is, but he put a switch right here. He ran an electric line this way. The only measurement I remember is this one. I believe this one was 36 inches. And he ran the wires around a very long, I forget how long this was, and one of you may have studied this as well, but it was a really long wire, like I'm thinking a mile or something, yeah, maybe a half a mile, I forget, but it was really, 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 really long. And he said, and he put the light bulb, let me think here. Oh my, I forget now because I wasn't going to draw this. I think he put the light bulb, yes, he put the light bulb straight across here, and that's where I put it. And he wanted to know how long people thought it would take for the light bulb to light up based on how fast electricity travels. And it ended up, it turns out that the light bulb lit almost instantaneously. And he went on to teach that electricity doesn't travel through wires, so most of you probably already know that. But there are people who actually think that the electricity travels through the wire instead of around the wire. Anybody here like that? Anyway, so that's okay if you, because, but it was, there were some eye-popping discoveries we made about electricity and magnetism. And we got so interested in talking about that, that the students wanted to go home and research it on their own. And it was not actually included in the book, and they weren't going to get tested on it. So just a real quick disclaimer here, you have to be careful with this kind of thing, because the first thing you know, you can distract them to the point that they don't prepare for their test. But if you can interest them enough to where they can keep the information they need, plus go for more. You've done, yeah, more than your job. How about the speed of light? Do you know what the speed of light is? This is just a real quick random one. Speed of light, Jordan, do you remember?
It's like 186,000 feet per second.
Okay, good. And do you know what the speed of light is? Do you know that there's a difference between the speed of light one way or two way? So like the speed of light from me to the wall over there versus from me to the wall over there and back again. Do you know it goes different speeds depending which way it's going? All right, I don't either, but can you prove that wrong? So think about that a bit. As far as we know, it is only possible to measure the two-way speed of light, not the one way. And we studied and we studied and we tried to figure out a way to measure the one-way speed of light. So it is true that we have, as far as we know, we have no proof that the light isn't traveling a different speed to the wall and back to me again, or if you were to reflect something off a mirror, it's not provable. Now, it doesn't really seem that feasible, but it really makes the students think. And it makes them think far beyond just, the normal things about electricity and magnetism. All right, or how about black holes or the Bermuda Triangle, and the list goes on and on. Ask the students to ask questions. We've done that. Every day you have to have a question. Your students ask a question that they want an answer to, that they want discussion on that may not have a good answer. Are you familiar with the Bermuda Triangle? Who's familiar with that? Okay, good. I'm kind of a little more interested over here than over here, but down there in the water, where the water in the air, where everybody gets swirled away and disappears and nobody knows what happened to them. You don't believe it? Oh, come on. All right. So how about black holes? Do you believe in black holes? So have students come up with questions for you. And this is, again, a little above lower grade level, but the lower graders are going to bring questions that are just as mysterious to them and just as important for you to give credibility to. And you say, oh, good question. What do you think? Don't you say, oh, that's... And we have a discussion about it, and they talk about it, and you hear their ideas. Just beautiful, beautiful food for thought. Number five, be an actor. Be an actor. See what yours says, yes. All right, so one of the things taught in, I think it's Handbooks to Creative Teaching, is that you should not fall into the trap of trying to prove to your boys, and forgive me, guys, if any of you have done this, but this is a guy's side of the room thing. You should not try to prove to your boys that you can stand on your head by standing on your head the first day of school just to prove it to them. He teaches that that would not be a good idea, and I don't know how you feel about that. Maybe you've done that before, or maybe it would be a good idea in your room. I don't know how well that would work. But that is specifically not the type of acting I'm talking about. The type of acting I'm talking about is acting things out for them and getting involved in acting things out. And this is part of selling the sizzle. This is part of just helping them to enjoy it and to become a part of it. So don't exactly, maybe you have stood on your heads. I taught that pretty, with quite a bit of clarity before, and then had somebody come up to me and say, oh yeah, I stood on my head in my classroom and it seemed to work well, so whatever. If that's what you do in yours, whatever. But anyway, we don't have something to prove to our students. We are just acting to show them how things work. Have you ever done, read off spelling words and made your students jump when you hollered? Perfect, thank you. So the word was holler. So I hollered it and they jumped and you had everybody's attention again immediately. And it was just, it's fantastic. Don't do it all the time or they'll quit jumping or they'll be on edge, one or the other. So, but, so I won't do it again, I promise. Throw them, not here. Throw a mat on the floor. Have you seen this done? Throw a mat on the floor and throw a mat on the floor and get in the position of prayer like the Muslims do. Have you done that? I've actually seen that done at a teacher's institute up front. Good friend of mine, and he was wearing his suit coat and it rode all the way down the front over, and he showed us how to pray in the Muslim tradition. And I will never forget it. And I don't think our students would ever forget if we do these things. How about setting an alarm on your phone so that every time that they're supposed to be praying, okay, now would be time to pray. Just to help them to understand the tradition instead of just saying, oh, they pray so many times a day and they, right? So we actually go through these things and we act it out with them. Do push-ups with your boys in phys ed and let them see that your muscles hurt and your lungs scream for air just like theirs do. Just act it out. It's part of your act. Illustrate Bible stories to them. Get them involved in helping you. It's amazing what students remember if you act it out with them. All right, now for my favorite part of acting and impersonating. And I'm sure you've already picked up on this, but my favorite part is storytelling. I just love storytelling to make a point and to sell some sizzle. Use stories freely. I say this with a lot of, I'm just convinced on this, okay? I'm convinced that you must use stories. Do you know why I'm convinced? Have you ever read in the Bible where Jesus wanted to make a point and didn't use a story? Probably, but most of the time he used a story. Most of the time he would say, there was a man, or, and he spake a parable, and over and over and over again. And we don't forget those stories, and our children don't forget those stories. So tell them stories. Use them freely. Stories like the king of the land in the middle, or they grind exceeding small. And I just love to see the students' expressions and how upset they get at Hazen Kinch, and then how sober they are when, I have to hold myself back here, they get to the end and he screams. Do you remember that? I wanted to scream, sorry. He screams this awful scream because he discovers his boy is dead. And the title of the story was They Grind Exceeding Small. And you can take the opportunity to tell your children that not all justice is served immediately. And it's very important. The way we live is a big deal. The Lion and the Mouse, they love that one. Stories that happened to your grandpa. So I have a grandpa story that's a fun one to tell them. I'm going to quickly tell you now. We have my dad, actually. So dad has grandpa's dining room table, old dining room table. And that table could tell you many stories. But one of the better ones is that years ago, the way they did their soup, and they had their chicken and everything in the soup, well, they included the gizzard in the soup of the chicken noodle soup, whatever it was, and they had company over. And one of the men got the gizzard, and he was eating the gizzard and chewing on the gizzard, and the gizzard wouldn't go down. He could not manage to finish it. So he chewed and he chewed and he chewed, and finally he figured out a discreet way to, he pulled his handkerchief out of his pocket, a discreet way to, rolls it up, puts it in his pocket. The conversation goes on. They're sitting around the dining room table and just having a fabulous time. It wasn't just family. There were guests from church over, having a fabulous time talking. And all of a sudden, this same man felt this tremendous urge to sneeze, and he knew he's not going to be able to stop his sneeze. So he reaches in and he shakes his hanky out, and there goes the gizzard flying across the dining room floor. All right, so what's the moral of the story? Everybody saw it fly. Everybody knew what had happened. What's the moral of the story? I mean, you get found out, right? So you can be a little creative here, but there's so many different morals that you can come up with from so many stories. Your students won't forget them, or if you just talk to them in non-story form and don't add your own details, you probably won't keep their attention. I would love to tell you the story about the man who, I've never been so scared in my life. I don't know how scared you've been before, but I thought I was going to die one time. And I actually expected I was going to be killed in a mass shooting. Can you imagine that? That's what I thought was going to happen. And you can say, well, you have a keen imagination. I do. But this was in church. And I had my son, my oldest son. There he sits right there. Put your hand up, Douglas. Yeah, okay, so he was under my arm. He was really, really small. And this man came, tripping into our church with a cane. And he had a skull and crossbones on his T-handle, knotty looking cane, and he came in last into church. He was sitting out in a really spooky looking car, and anyway, we'll finish the story later if we have time. All right, yeah, you can see I'm here, right? These conversations matter, and the reason they matter is because they make up not only who you are, but who your students become. You can have them in the morning before school. You can have them after school. You can have them at lunchtime. You can have them in the hall. You can have them during class, but be careful, right? Because the first thing you know, you've infringed on your students' time. What I want us to remember is the stories that become a part of us and our children make up the fabric of your classroom, and by extension, your students, and perhaps someday the church, that you'll be a grandfather or a grandmother in. A final caution on this one, as much as, where did another paper go? As much as I enjoy acting, we have to be careful that we act wisely and not foolishly, because it can be very easy to fall into the trap of just doing foolish things. Your students will stay engaged, but not for the right reasons. And it will not likely produce what you want in your classroom. A second pitfall, students, like our own children, find security in authenticity. They want you to be for real. So in all your acting and everything you do to keep your classroom a theater of sorts, be careful that you are for real and they know who you are as a person and who you serve and where you are pointing them. Don't become somebody who keeps them on edge all the time. For sure, don't become somebody that they're going to mistrust. Be an actor, but not a fake. Number 6, fill their downtime. We did this at the beginning. Is that our bell? Okay. We did this at the beginning. So if you missed the survey, I'm sorry this morning. You missed the survey when we started out. But fill their downtime. Have things going in the schoolroom in the morning when they come so that they are engaged as soon as they walk in the room. Two things happen when you do this. The first thing that happens is when they come walking in the room, you are setting the stage for the day and they are not going to be getting involved in wrong activities. The second thing is the quicker you get their attention, the better your chance of keeping it. So if I had let you sit here and talk about the news and talk about grain prices and talk about fabric and talk about whatever else for the first 10 minutes of this talk, I might have had a harder time getting you switched over, right? But if you can get your children's attention, you have a much better chance of keeping it, at least if you do it creatively. All right, last but certainly not least, you want to guess what the last one is? It's to love your students. And I left it here for a reason. I had really wanted to read 1 Corinthians 13 when we're done here. But love your students. If you're a new teacher, you might be like a new courtship partner or a young couple where you think love is just a given and there are no days that you're going to have to try to do it. Enter Marita. I talked to Marita some time ago, not her real name, but she told me how school was so difficult for her and how she was just not sure if she was going to be able to hang on another year. And in the course of conversation, I finally asked her, I said, well, Marita, do you actually love your students? And this sort of shocked look came across her face. She's like, well, I think so. She's still teaching today, and she's happily teaching, and something has changed in her. You see, our students know whether we care about them or not, right? If you don't care about your students, and if you don't love your students, they're not going to care about anything you have to say. You may as well close your books and walk out. And I don't think that you're going to, gain anything by just keeping on talking to them if you don't care about them. So be sure that you care about your students and love them. I think we're going to quit with that. Let's recap. Let's go to capturing their attention keys one more time. Number one, sell the sizzle. Number two, believe in the steak. Number three, nudge them toward the impossible. Number four, safeguard the mystery. Number five, be an actor. Number six, fill their downtime. Number seven, last but not least, love your students. Do you have any questions or tips that you would like to give us before we dismiss? We're going to try to do this on time. Any questions or tips, anybody? There's a lot more experience sitting here than just me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Anybody? Okay, if not, thank you for your great attention. I really appreciate it, and you're dismissed.